This is AM Studios Podcast, where we curate all the knowledge, resources, and power you need to help you create your business in entertainment, podcasting, music, tech, art, fashion, and more. Every week, we share everything we've learned at AM from the greatest minds in the business. Let's go.
Cool. Hey, we've got another question. You mind if I ask a question? So I'm an actor and I've signed with you, and here is the first banger.
Okay.
Like, all it is at the moment is it's a banger that needs to go out there, needs to be heard by the world.
Okay.
What's going to happen now?
Cool.
And how long is it going to, like, what is the, from the time that I've given you the banger as a WAV file or an MP3 or whatever? Like,
WAV. Always WAV.
Okay, so you're going to get a WAV, and then you're going to get, and you are going to now make magic with that track. Without, like, giving us the whole playbook or the 300-page, like, breakdown, what are the kind of milestones you're going to hit over the next year?
So, I think, first of all, you need to understand that that song is, you guys are still the label. You're still the driving force behind the song. We don't own anything. We're just distributing it for you and supporting your own efforts. So what we do with artists is they come to the office and we get the whole team around the table and we do a listening session, internal listening session. We now choose the focus single and we'll then start developing a content strategy and a rollout plan around this. You know, what is the song about? Where can we leverage it? Because TikTok is such a big thing. Can we start a challenge? Can we get influencers involved to do their own content? Is there possibility for a music video? And we'll do that first rollout strategy. If it's just an EP or a single that you're releasing, we want to make sure it gets out the gate with a bang. So we will have everything in place so that when that song goes live, you want to boost the algorithm of Spotify so that it tells the curators, oh, the song's picking up quickly. We better put it into a playlist or something like that. When it's a more established artist, like your Busters or your Black Diamonds, pitching is a lot easier. But a developing artist, it's a lot harder. You got to have that groundwork on social media, you know?
And you need the artist to be working
100%
with you, right?
100%. 100%. Actually, if the artist isn't pushing it, then why should we? If you're not believing in your own music, why should we? You know? And that's it, the passion behind the artist and his music. We've seen it many, many times. Somebody comes, they want a distribution deal with us. They are so passionate about their music. They're presenting their music to us. But you look at their numbers and you look at their social media, and the last time they post was January, February. You know, they're not engaging and doing anything with their music. They're not putting out. And this is it's actually a thing I'm looking at delving more into is, are artists still artists or are we just content creators like everyone else? You know, that line has blurred so much now.
I mean, the people that are, I want to like kind of pose a challenge to that is that that artists or songs that are speaking to our hearts, you know, are always created by artists, right? And then there is also the noise of content creation that comes with that. And I suppose that maybe the challenge, and maybe this is the challenge that creators face, is to always to ensure that in the game of content creation that you are always reducing yourself, or at least checking yourself on whether you are still remaining an artist in the content creation game, because the true power, the true value of the copyrights that you create rest in their ability to talk to people. Abalele is a banger, but the song, the lyrics, the reason why it's a banger, the reason why we have Abalele and Asibe Happy and those things is because there's something about the way that those lyrics speak to you that makes it more than just a number piano, just a more than just a club banger, you know? And there are lots of other songs out there that may form or fit into more of a content creation sort of thing, where it's just like, you know, just getting like bang after, I mean, you know, just club hits after, I mean, after club hits are out after club hits. And yet you have the Msakis and, you know, the black, you know, the guys that are, there are guys that just remain because they will never stop, they never stop speaking to us, you know? And I suppose it's the balance, right?
100%. Although there's a lot of songs that have come out and the content creation noise around it happened because of the initial content creation, you know? And that comes down to not every release is the same, you know? So you got to really look at that.
When it comes to whether upcoming artists or established artists, when we negotiate around royalties, right? Is it advisable as an artist to be at the negotiating table and getting the royalties directly from the distributor, whatever the royalty split is? Or is it written in stone that a company label pay the royalties on your
behalf? So your deal with your record label is not going to ever change. If you are in a record label deal and your split is a split, you won't be able to change that. That's not going to change at the negotiation table of the distributor. So if you're, you know, you're, because in a record label deal, you will have assigned essentially the very heart of a record label deal is says that for the period of 3 years or for the period of, or for the duration that it takes me to release two albums, I will assign all of the sound recording copyright to this other person. Okay. And in that period, the following percentages apply. Okay. So now your question is, in this, whatever's been created here is now coming to the distributor, and there's a deal you're asking about in the deal that this, in this deal, you're now saying, is it valuable for you to be at the table for that thing? Well, you won't get direct payment. So
you're saying if you're a featured artist on somebody's song, yes. So you make the deal and you decide this guy gets 20% and this guy gets 30% and the label gets 50% or whatever. Your distributor can do splits like that so that the payments go out like that. We need to see paperwork that everyone's agreed to do it that way. And then it doesn't have to go directly to the label or to the main artist. It can just go out every month in those increments that it's been agreed upon. Yeah.
Cool. So just be clear that would be something that needs to be written in paper up front before the thing is recorded. Because just to clarify that distributors are not concerned with dealing with artists and they're not concerned with dealing with composers. The actual function of a distributor is that they take a product, a sound recording that has been, and that the rights to distribute it has been assigned to them by the owner of the sound recording. So at the heart of that deal has got nothing to do with artists or composers or anything like that. So the fact that they may offer a service where they can direct money to the artist is a value add on top of the crux of exactly what it is that they do. You know, so it would be unwise to go with the assumption that, you know, I will just go and sort out a side payment. If you haven't got that thing locked down, and I mean, I would imagine it's like the kind of clause you're talking about is like, Or any deal or any monetization, this 20% will be paid directly from any like service provider directly to the artist. It's a very complicated clause to write into a contract. I can't imagine you would need to make sure that thing is so locked down because it's very, that would be very, very difficult. Because the other problem is that most of those especially with sound recording, if let's say you're a featured artist on someone else's thing, it's most likely that the record label is going to put in some sort of recoupment cost into the deal. Okay. If you go and like you happen to like, you know, make it as a featured artist to feature on a Black Coffee track or something like that, there may be an existing clause in there that says that they have to recoup. They can't recoup the cost from you if you're getting direct payments from all the sources of income. You know what I mean? So that's why I'm saying in my mind, I'm already just seeing all these complications around it. On DistroKid, you can, but again, in DistroKid, all the parties have to agree. You can't just go to DistroKid and just say, well, I get 20% of that track. It has to happen clearly with every single person, and changing those splits and all this stuff is very like, you know, yeah.
And just personally, if it's your music, or you as a feature on a song and people are negotiating on your behalf, I personally would suggest be there. I don't like people to talk about my work where I'm not in the room being part of this. So that would be my advice. You know, I don't think Bruce Springsteen, I don't think anything happens that he doesn't know about. You know what I mean?
My question has to do with performance royalties. So I make a song with a dude, and then this guy ends up performing the song in a different province, wherever. I found out recently that Samro allows you to put down your performances. I'd like to know how much they pay for that. And if this person is featured on my song and they're performing their verse wherever they are, am I getting a certain percentage of that? Basically that's the question, performance.
Okay, so the first thing is, just to clarify, the word performance royalties is it's a misnomer. It's a confusing word, okay? Because it doesn't relate to performers. Performance royalties relate to the public performance of your composition. Okay, I just want to be clear about that. Okay, performance royalty, that if you are the songwriter, the lyricist, the composer, or the publisher of a song, and the work that you have created, the musical and literary work that you created, if that is performed in public in any way, a performance royalty is due to you. Okay. And when we say performed in public, we mean that if I had to get up now and sing Loliwe, if I had to take Loliwe and play it on radio, if Loliwe was used in a television performance, in a television film or a series or something like that, all of those are what we call public performances, and for all of those, performance royalties are due. Okay. So in the same way that I was talking about how Capasso was set up, the law says that provided that the song has been made public, okay, exactly the same way as recording it, provided that the song has been made public before, I don't need to ask permission to perform this music in public. I don't need to get the permission to put it on radio or something. I do need to get permission to synchronize it, but once I've got the synchronization license, I don't have to get permission to play it in public, okay? Provided that I pay a royalty to that owner. Now, it's not practical for me every time I want to go, and if I want to get up and sing Loliwe, I've got to go to TS Records every single time and pay them like 30 cents or 3 rand, you know, for every time I perform it. And they've got to deal with like 300,000 people each coming to pay them 3 rand, okay? So the law then says, we have provided for organizations to be set up who will receive all the royalties and then distribute those royalties to the composers, okay? Does that make sense? Okay. So in this case, the question is, somebody else is performing his song in Limpopo, and what's going to happen? Shouldn't he be getting money? Yeah, the answer is yes, you should. The question about how much money is due is very, very tricky to say. In fact, I'm not even sure Samro knows how much is due, because a lot of it comes down to just, they will collect licenses, they aggregate all the information, and then they make a kind of an estimated guess. They actually use calculations to estimate the overall play of your song based on the reporting, because there isn't enough accurate reporting on the performance, on live performances. Okay. In fact, even on radio, to be honest, it's a mess. But regardless, there is money that's supposed to be sitting there.
Okay.
It will only come to you in the event that the venue or the place that was responsible for the performing of that song has let Samro know that your song was being performed.
Okay.
It's not actually that the person who you're talking about, the other artist or the person who featured on your song, it's actually not his responsibility to cue the song. It's the responsibility of the venue to make sure that the cue sheets are submitted. So it's actually the responsibility of the venue. Every single time a club, if Zone 6 is playing tracks every single night, like, it's actually the responsibility of Zone 6 to have cue sheets for every single night to say, these are all the songs that were played.
Okay.
That's not practical. It doesn't happen in overseas. They have monitoring. You have monitoring systems that are put in that actually do all the queuing and, you know, of that stuff, and then they submit. But anyway, so the answer to your question is that you should be getting royalties. Nobody really knows how much it is. It's probably not a lot if it's live performances. Live performances pay a lot less, I think, than radio, if I'm not mistaken. On top of that, it would require that A, you have notified Samro exactly perfectly, okay, and following that the venue has notified Samro that song, which matches word for word, letter for letter, your notification and the splits that you and the other artist have also notified are exactly letter for letter, perfect, exactly, you know, done. Once all that's done, Samro may pay you for it. Okay, it's tricky. I mean, I don't really know what else to say. That's the reality.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So what you're saying is Samro has to agree. No, the place where I was performing has to agree that I was performing there. So I'm sending out information to Samro that I performed on this particular day, and that venue also has to do the same thing. But
no, not the value. Oh, you're right. So you can actually, you're now on the portal. I mean, like, again, I'm not this. This is a very, very, the portal is a very, very tricky environment. So yes, there is a part in the portal where you can claim that your song was played at this venue, you know, and you can go and you can, I'm not sure what that actually results in. You know what I mean? I submit like literally second by second reporting of my songs on radio that is matched, that is audited, and I still don't get paid by Samro, you know. It's a very tricky situation. Yeah, go for it.
Is it like an additional function, or is it something that you guys also like work with them? Is go to Samro and then come to you guys? That's just what I
want to... I'm going to actually answer that, because I'm going to give it to you from an industry perspective and not from a company's perspective. You, when, as a rights, there are seven rights holders in the track, which we've discussed, and we've got the sound recording. Okay, think of the sound recording, the technical term for the sound recording or that copyright is what we call an entrepreneurial work. Okay, the reason for why it's an entrepreneurial work, it is something that was made, it's very tangible, and it can be sold. Money can change hands for it. Okay, I make a table, okay, and I go and sell a table. I can make another table with the exact same design. Okay, I can make a CD and make another CD with the same track in it, or I can take an MP3 and I can copy it and make the exact same thing, and each of these things has a value that can go and get sold, right? Same as I sell a table, okay? And in the world of what InGrooves does is they are, if I sell a table, if I make 100 tables and there is a furniture distributor who is able to get this table out to all of the right people who want to buy the tables that I make, okay, the InGrooves is that function. They are the people who specialize in knowing how to take the exact WAV or MP3 or the audio file that you have created. They are specialists in being able to take that file and putting it in the right people's, in front of the right people, on the right platform, so that money is generated and that money then comes to you. Okay. And you want to be careful about like a about talking about royalties from that, because that is actually a percentage. That is a percentage of sales. Okay, I don't know how you actually refer to it, but yeah. So when you're talking about the sale of the audio, you wanna think about it in your head as the sale of a product, okay? Because royalties or the passive income that comes from what you've created, let's say from mechanical royalties, which is, we haven't dealt with here. We're not gonna talk about that, if that's okay. We can maybe address that in another week. That's Sampra, okay, is the final piece of all these puzzles of all these things. All of these other people get money or get money to you based on the release of the sound of the release and the sales of this MP3 of this audio file. You want to sell it. You want money to change hands. If people are listening on Spotify, money is changing hands by virtue of the fact that they are subscribing to that service. Okay. If people are watching or listening to your music on YouTube Music, okay, if it's on YouTube, okay, they are paying by watching adverts, and if they are using YouTube Premium or YouTube Music, they are paying their subscription. People are buying songs on iTunes or buying albums. I don't know, do they do that anymore? Not really. Well, yeah, okay, but so you can either buy or you're subscribing, but there's money changing hands the whole time for the valuable audio file that you have created. Okay. And that's the function that Ingrooves provides. Everything else is essentially, it's better to think of those as royalties, or think of those as passive income, that as passive income that comes as the result of your creation. You know what I mean? But the selling is the hard work. Selling is the thing. I need to get the table into something else. Somebody has to pay money for it. That's where the hard work comes, and that's where the grind comes from. You know what I mean?
And the reason we can't give one figure, how much we pay out per stream from Apple or from Spotify or YouTube, is, remember that somebody with a premium account, you'll get paid more out than somebody that's listening in a free account. So you do get paid out for all of the streams. It's just different values and also different territories. So some territories pay out more than other territories.
Afternoon, gents. My name is Tonic. I just needed to ask a question based on, so you receive the song from the artist or from the band, whoever, and then you guys do the marketing and distribution. Before the marketing and distribution, do you sit down with the artist and have certain targets based on possible following, social media following, in terms of what targets you want to reach in terms of marketing or in terms of a revenue after the release? And if you do not meet those targets, what is the action plan afterwards?
I've never been involved in a situation where there are targets, and if you don't hit those targets, we won't release another song, you know? I think if there's been money spent and money has to be recouped, or we would maybe be wary of putting the same kind of spend on another song before recouping there, but it wouldn't mean that you couldn't release another song. So, that makes sense.
I'm going to ask a question on behalf of everybody. What kind of what's the range of deals I think, you know, let's say on the one spectrum, do you do single releases, or do you work on like sort of periods or terms, years, what?
We, on occasion, will do single releases or one album releases. We prefer to work on terms. So our 80-20 straight distribution deal is on a 2-year term, is to have a relationship, work together. That's 80 for the artist, yeah. Thanks. And then we have other standards, which is a 70-30. There's different ones, 60-40s, 50-50. It all depends on what is needed from us to make that happen. We've even got to a point now where we have hybrid deals. So I don't know if you know the band BTS. Yeah, so BTS is with Ingrooves, and they've got a deal that Ingrooves distributes their music, but it's Interscope.
Right?
Interscope, as a label, they've signed on. So they haven't signed to Interscope, but Interscope gets a percentage of their streams and market it. So it's kind of, it's a deal going forward that I think is going to change the way distribution's happening, and it's going to be a really great relationship between distributors and major labels, where artists still own their masters. You're signing on for a term, a period. And yeah, so that's probably the newest deal that we could offer.
One more question. What about the artists that are all in group? Is it a family? Like, do the artists, like, you've got, like, let's say an artist gets in, like, what's the likelihood of like, sort of internal collaborations being set up and stuff, because it's just easier? Is it not easier for artists to collaborate that are both already involved with you guys?
It's much easier when artists are with us. So even, you know, in Grooves has almost 30 offices all around the world. And Wade has already started dealing with many sort of accounts. I just forgot my own title. Yeah, integration. So if we've got an artist that wants to work, say we've got a country singer who wants to work with Dolly Parton, who's with Ingrooves, it is a lot easier for us to talk to her account manager and go, listen, we're part of this Ingrooves. It makes that process easier. We locally help facilitate a lot of features, a lot of collabs. What we can do is introduce you to each other. First of all, send the music. Do they like the music? Take it another step. Introduce the two artists to each other. We can't force anyone to work with anybody else, but we can try facilitate where we do, where we can.
I want to know if would you consider working with the artist that doesn't have any social media presence at all?
Yes, I think Wade should answer this, but I've been in this situation and I can't see how...
But they have good music.
Have good music. I think Wade would be better to talk about this. Yeah.
We have special cases where we have, but very far and few between. We are an invite-only sort of service, so every artist and every deal gets vetted on their merits and demerits and what the potential could be, you know, all that sort of thing. And for artists that are in that situation, I tell them, you know what, go to your DIY services, get your music out there, start marketing, start promoting, and once it's picking up and it's moving, come back to us again and try again.
Yeah.
For me, it's just, I can't understand why an artist wouldn't want to go that route. The beautiful thing about social media is, I think when I was young and into music, I used to get like the Hit Parader and Top 40, and then you just find out what your favorite artists are up to, what they're releasing, and then right at the back of the magazine, it'd sometimes be fun stuff like them on the beach or walking a dog. Now social media has basically put your favorite artist in your home. How many people follow the record labels Instagram handles? They follow the artist. So for me, it seems irrelevant these days to not. You talk directly to your audience. That's how they communicate with you.
But just to wrap that one up, the next thing is that it was interesting for me that you said that would you sign an artist that doesn't have a following but has good music? And the truth is that there's nobody that can determine whether it's good music yet, because there has been no feedback. The only feedback has been from you about yourself or your very close family about yourself. And this is, again, it's the reality and the honesty of putting yourself out there that is so important as being part of that musical journey, you know, because if you're making music for your family, then you get to say, I make good music, because your feedback, because 100% of your tribe has given you the feedback that you need, you know. But if the idea is that you want your music to speak to a lot of people, then you have to give your music the opportunity to get the feedback from the people outside of your arts, you know, outside of the wall that you, you know, the safe haven of where your music sounds good, you know. because music does sound, music, like, you get to love every single second of every single piece of music that you've done. You know, you get to invest in the time to listen to it and all that stuff. But, like, in exactly the same way that you only listen to stuff, you will only give, like, a specific amount of your time to other people's music, you know, is exactly the same kind of respect you need to give to the fan base, to the fans out there, you know, to say, I need your feedback, therefore, tell me what you think of this, you know.
So, actually, are you agreements, exclusive agreements, or do you allow, maybe, if I mean, using Amuse, maybe, as a distributor? Can I use Amuse and still use In Grooves, or is it exclusive agreements? On
there are non-exclusive agreements. We try not to do them as far as possible. If we're going to be putting all our weight behind an artist, we want to know that we're in this for a little bit of a longer time than just one album. There are special cases, special releases, which might just be a one-off release, in which case it would be something like that.
Okay. Before he goes on, I'd like to also just give an outsider view on that as well. Is you don't want to be in this kind of agreement. You don't want to be in it where it's not exclusive. If you are not 100% in it, you cannot expect them to be 100% in it. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like, you're coming into this, if you don't believe that they should be there, that they deserve 100%, you may as well just do DistroKid. You may as well just do TuneCore, and then you go and get it yourself, because you're not going to get back from them what you want. I would imagine the non-exclusive deals are almost certainly always coming from a position where they may actually be very, very low in the power balance, and it may be that they are the ones that need to actually prove themselves in an example, like where, you know, a big international artist is giving them an opportunity to show what they can do, you know, but not going to give up, you know, whatever exclusivity just yet, you know. And if you're not in that position, am I right? I mean, I can't imagine in an environment where, I mean, I wouldn't want to be in an environment where this kind of thing is not exclusive, because a big part of the beauty and a big part of the journey of this thing is developing the relationship, you know. And especially in a world where you are not giving up copyright, you get, this is like, you know, I mean, I'm kind of waxing lyrical here, but it's a very, very important opportunity that shouldn't be missed when you engage in this kind of relationship. But if you had to decide to go into this distribution relationship, that you want this thing to be where you are, like, where you're picking up the phone every single day. What can I do next? What do I need to do? Is this the right thing? Did I make the right decision here? Like, if we're going to release in 2 weeks, what can, like, am I giving too many posts, too little posts? Da, da, da. You want that to be like a true partnership. Yeah. Next, there was somebody. Yeah, go for it.
Hello, everybody. My name is Mainsy. I have a question to the In Grooves company. As much as In Grooves is a distribution company, right? Does it offer like a management team, anything like that?
So management as in your live work, you're basically, no, not as In Grooves. We don't manage artists. We, from like management or agency, we used to have a sister company that looked after us, that sort of stuff, and hoping to have one again, but we don't do it ourselves.
Second question, does In Grooves, differs with the services when it comes to, like, maybe it's a record company, then there's an artist. Maybe I'm an independent artist and I own a record label, right? And then there's a bigger one. There's a bigger company, like, say, Mabala Noise or something. Let me make an example, right? Does the services differs as in, like, a small independent company, with the Mabala Noise, is that a difference with the services?
I think the best way to put it, there's no difference between the services. The only difference would be one might have the value and the amount of streams they're bringing in, that means that we could advance those services, where the other one would have to pay upfront for those services, but the services are exactly the same and available to all.
Thank you.
Guys, I think we're going to wrap up. It's almost time now. I actually just want to say from my side, this was really, really enlightening for me. And I hope it was for you guys as well. So this part of it is, I think, for creators and people that are, you know, the people that just want to write good songs, or people that just want to release good stuff. You know, it's like, it can be quite daunting to kind of figure out exactly, you know, who do I trust and who do I give away things to, you know? I got a really, like, kind of good sense of what a distributor does and the value it is, and also what I should be looking out for in, as if I was an aspiring artist.
Cool.